This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Okay, we are here. We are ready to roll here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. And also my Instagram live. And CC4, hello. My first one to join me this morning. How you doing? And here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Anything you want to talk about, now's the time to ask. Advice is free. Can't be free. Jill, how you doing? So, you're good. My sister is the second person. Not even the first. She's the second. And let's see. Okay. Wave. So, Ivy Blue, how are you? So, anyway, get your questions ready. I have some things I want to talk about. And, you know, some of the things I want to talk about are, it's almost like an opinion. And if I would be like an op-ed, if I was going to write an article about this, things that are kind of changing in the profession. And I know it through my clients. And it's very interesting because, one of the things we want to talk about is just the actual dynamic of the relationship of the exam, the pet exam. You walk into a veterinary hospital, what happens is, I'll give you an example of how this all started. My philosophy, if you will, is that first of all, we see a big difference, a change in the behavior of the younger veterinarian. And I'd love to know if this is something that is just in the veterinary world or in any way. I mean, obviously, as far as veterinarians, I think I'm probably the only, sometimes if some of my colleagues hop on the show for a little bit, but most of you are obviously not veterinarians. And so in your workplace, is there a change that you've noticed in the work ethic, if you will? I'll give you some examples of what's going on in the veterinary world, but I find it a little bit disheartening because I worry about the future of at least our profession and what can we look forward to? What can you as pet parents look forward to? So some of the things that I've noted that I hear from others, let's go, Ivy Blue-Eyed, my vet met a vaccinated dog with Bartella. I have two other frail seniors. How about us revaccinate 2 months later if she was vaccinated? Well, I mean, so in other words, you don't know if the vaccine was there. Bordetella, it's not going to be harmful. It's a killed vaccine. It's not even, by definition, it's actually a bacterin, not a vaccination. It's not a virus. So there's no replicating in the body. That's why it's only good. I mean, just to put into perspective, and this is going back, many years, 50 years when I was in, started vet school, or, 45 years ago. And that is they used to say then that because it's a bacterin, a killed vaccine, it doesn't have the same efficacy of, say, these viral vaccines that are multiplying within the body. They're called attenuated vaccines. So they say that the Bordetella vaccine is really not that good. And if to really get the best of it, you need to use it like every 4 months, 3 times a year. Obviously, people aren't going to do that, which is why I'm sure if you board or frequent a doggy daycare, they're going to recommend it or require it every 6 months. And they're not wrong. It's not that great a vaccine. It's the only thing we got. But as far as efficacy, you can only expect so much. So if you have to revaccinate 2 months later, it's not a problem. It's not going to cause a problem. And you can't overdo it with Bordetella. So I would go. Now, intranasal, fine. Personally, as a vaccine administrator, I don't like the intranasal. And I don't like the intranasal because the dogs don't like the intranasal. I have much more trouble getting that intranasal vaccine up the nose than I do giving a needle. And now with the new oral vaccine, that's a piece of cake. I'd say 98% of the dogs, first of all, they like the taste. They know, but you don't have to open their mouth. All you do is pull their cheek away, sit in the corner. And they may object a little bit. Then when they start tasting, go, not bad. So I like that one the best. Even nasty dogs, I can get into the mouth. So that is my favorite. But yes, I would definitely recommend, and you could talk to your veterinarian about that. Or all you have to do is just watch the dog's reaction when you're giving that intranasal. Or they hate it. They're fighting you. You're lucky to get a third of it in the nose. I'm not a big fan. So anyway, but I'm not too worried about the vaccine itself. So until I have other questions, let me go back to my conversation, my discussion, if you will. So if you ask the young veterinarian, are you prepared to work full time? I go, oh yeah. So how does your full time work? Well, I'm 3 to 3.5 days a week, 30 hours. That's your full time, 30 hours. I'm still at 60. And I graduated knowing that I was going to work 60 hours and 5 or 6 days a week. So it is crazy, crazy when you think about it. My life with corgis recommend vaccination. It depends on the vaccine. The oral vaccine for Bordetella is the only one that I know of. There may be one, but most of the others are going to be injectable. That's a good question. If you have I think that's a thrombocytopenia is what you're saying. I would talk to your internist, the veterinary internist, whoever made the diagnosis. I think if that's the case, there may be something we can give pre-vaccine to minimize any kind of reaction. If not, then to not get the vaccine. The only vaccines that I really care about, if you had to break it down in Los Angeles, it would be distemper parvo. Rabies, required by law, yeah. Am I worried about one of my pets or any pet getting rabies? I haven't had a case of rabies in a dog in Los Angeles in over 50, 60 years. I'm not that worried about that. Bordetella, I mean, if they get it, it's like a cold. They rarely, if ever, die from Bordetella. Influenza, they can get more of a reaction, but and that's it. You're not going to give rattlesnake vaccine. Don't take them hiking when they're rattlesnakes. A lot of these things, ticks. Now those preventives are oral, so that's easy. So as far as the vaccination, first of all, if you're here in LA, I wouldn't give a Lyme vaccine anyway. I don't. Because we just don't see it, Lyme disease. So, it's very important when you're going, and this goes back to my original question that I'm certainly trying to finish my discussion on. And that is, I think there is a lot, which I guess you can pause, Zyrtec or Benadryl or Claritin. All right, so first of all, you have to know something about, for those that didn't hear, which is better for dog itching and paw biting, Zyrtec or Benadryl or Claritin? So, my answer for those, none of the above. However, let me explain why. So first of all, the mediator of the allergic / inflammatory response in people happens to be histamine. So therefore, we take an antihistamine. Histamine plays a minor, if any, role in canine allergy. So therefore, to give a dog antihistamine, why? But, now let's talk about the side effects of the antihistamine. Why do I not personally like Zyrtec or Claritin? Because they are the new non-drowsy. Why I like chlorpheniramine, which is chlorotrimetan, and Benadryl. Why? Because they're drowsy. I want the drowsy. Because if anything, it's not going to help actually stop the allergic response. Maybe 5% is based on histamine. The most isn't. So if I want to give an antihistamine, I'm going to give it because of the sedative effect, not the antihistaminic effect. So therefore, I'm a big fan of Benadryl. I recommend it a lot for mild sedation, going into travel, good dogs getting into cars. It just chills them out. It's a milligram per pound. It's an easy dosing. Remember, 25 milligram over the counter is 25 milligrams. And you just, if it's a 50-pound dog, you have two. 75-pound dog, give three. I mean, it's so easy. Anyway, so that's kind of my recommendation. All right. What do you think about local honey to help allergies causing itching? I can't comment because I haven't done it. I know there are a lot of more naturopathic, homeopathic remedies out there that people have used and some do well. So I wouldn't say no. I would say try it. And if it works, fantastic. But if not, obviously we have other things up our sleeves. So, but it's not going to hurt. That's that much I'll tell you. Well, I mean, too much sugar, but you're not giving too much. Okay, we'll see you on the 27th. Do you want an appointment? We have record. Okay, good. Wave. I'm waving. Wave. Hello, Karen. How are you? How's my teddy too? All right. So anyway, just to go back at this. So I noticed a change. And one thing that I'm getting, which is how this all started, my thought process, where did it come from? Out of the blue? Not really. Is that I'm about to give vaccines. Speaking of vaccines, I'm about to give vaccines to a dog. And I said, I'll be right back. I'm going to bring the vaccines. And she goes, you're going to do it here in front of me? I said, yeah. Why wouldn't I? I mean, if you got a baby, are you going to let the nurse take the baby away from you while they're doing whatever they're doing? Oh, of course they do it. So why? She goes, no, they would never. They would always take the dog to the back. I'm thinking, that's a cop-out. That really is. Now, are there situations where I would do that too? Yes. If I have a very aggressive dog. I've had dogs before that you don't want to really hold them, because owners may not understand the importance of really good control of a dog. If it's a simple dog where I just need a technician to come and help me, I'm in a room without a technician. I have my Scribble Vet now. I don't even need a technician in the room. They can tell me if they come in, they might, doc, you need anything? Yeah, you want to get me these vaccines, get me these meds. But I like to do as much as I can with and in front of the owner. I want them to see what they're paying for. And it's the relationship. What I'm seeing now is, anyway, so let's go back to the vaccine. So I have cases where the animal is crazy, and especially with a cat. And I take the animal away from the owner, and that tiger becomes a pussy cat. I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes just getting the separating them changes the owner. Dogs, I've had dogs that the owners tried to hold, cannot restrain them. A, because they don't always know how, but they're incorrigible, these dogs, right? I take them to the back, put them on a table. My tech comes over, holds them like regular, give the shot, no problem whatsoever. I even have cases where the animal's ready to kill me. And I take him the back and just sitting on the table, and I'm videotaping the dog. I mean, as I'm petting it, he's giving me kisses. It's unbelievable what these dogs do. Sometimes in front of their owners, they can be impossible. And in the back, they're fantastic. Now, if there's something that needed more of a procedure, and I need certain equipment, then I'm going to do it in the back. And I tell the owner that I'm going to do it in the back. But to give vaccines, to give a shot, I want to do it in front of the owner. That what's happening is that with the way these corporate practices, especially, are practicing, the more of the contact time is the owner and the nurse, the registered vet technician, RVT, veterinary nurse, whatever you want to call them. And they're getting very little time with the doctor, and yet they're booking half-hour appointments. Half-hour appointments, I can only see, 15, 20 a day. I see 40. I can't do half-hour appointments. And I used to do 20 minutes. Even that is a challenge for me now because I'm so busy. But, I think that they are, the newer generation are spending less time bonding. And I think there's something that we have to also be worried about. And that is that I think what's happened, the corporate practice are worried about, they don't want the clients to bond to their vet. They don't want it. Ask a mom who a pediatrician is, oh man, she'll, right there, she'll tell you. But one of my clients who the vet is, oh, in a heartbeat, they don't want to have to think about it. Because that, it's a lost art. It really is. And the reason they don't want it is because these vets are going to move on. Because they're going to get disenchanted. They're going to want to start their own practice, whatever it is. They don't want to do what I did when VCA fired me. And that is, all my clients followed me. So that is the issue. So they're trying to have the client bond to the practice as opposed to the doctor or to the staff. It is just insane to me. But don't let these veterinarians take your pet away to give a shot. And you could say, go, I know, you know what? I want to be here. I want to watch the shot. See how they respond. See how they react to that. That'll tell you a lot. If they insist, no, no, it's our policy. We don't want the owner getting hurt. Yes, the owner's not going to get hurt. And if you do have a really tough animal, then you have a tech come in and the tech can restrain. I'd say over 60, 70% of those refractory animals, tech comes in. And for that 30% on top, we'll take it in the back. And on many of those, as I said, just getting the pet away from the owner is going to make a big deal. And sometimes we even have to do, and I've had animals that need just a simple x-ray and they're fighting a thing. And I say to my tech, enough, we're not going to fight this dog. We're going to go to the owner. We say we need to keep the dog for a little while. We have to get a little sedative because he's going nuts. We don't want him to freak out. I don't want him to come in next time ready to kill everybody. So, you know, these are the things that we have to do. And this is very, very important to know. And don't be afraid. And yeah, it's not a desirable animal service company. No, it's not. The drive to the vet is longer than the vet touching the animal. It's true. It is nuts. Don't put up with it. Really, guys, pet parents, don't put up with it. You don't need to. It's not the way that you would want to be handled with your doctor. And from what I understand, a lot of doctors now, even they are having this problem. I mean, not they, the client, the patient, the person, is that they say the doctor comes in, shakes the hands, hello, and then the nurse does everything else. I'm not a fan. I mean, now, if the doc was always readily available, then and you can get him by phone or you can, you know, do an email, whatever, then that's okay. But other than that, don't stand for it. Back to Karen. So apical side point, nothing else. I mean, poor Teddy. Teddy is an Airedale Terrier. He is absolutely adorable. And yet, very, very allergic. Just so you know, Airedales by nature are one of the more allergic dogs. So I just want to make sure that we don't have secondary infection. When we have animals that are allergic, and by the way, there is a new oral to compete with the Apoquil. So there's Rennie. So I think we should maybe do that one and we'll try it and see if it works any better. But it's very important, A, frequent bathing. He should be bathed once a week. And also we need to get him on an antibiotic and with him an antifungal. Because once they have secondary infection, whether it's a bacterial infection or a fungal infection, which they often do secondary to allergy, then that is also itchy. So you could take care of the quote unquote allergy part with those medicines. But if you don't take care of the secondary infection, be it bacterial or fungal, then they're going to still scratch like crazy. And you could smell it. I think Teddy definitely has some fungal and should be put on something like fluconazole or ketoconazole. And that's, unfortunately, that's a long term. That's minimum a month and sometimes even 2 months straight. So we should take a look at them this week. I'll be in all week. All right. Bathe once a week. Good. How long can be an antifungal? Oh, I just said, so if we have to do it continually, and you'll know, you'll get that yeasty smell when what they call a doggy odor, that's usually because of a yeast infection or a fungal infection. So that's what we need to do. All right. So let us break. So I would love to hear your comments or your experiences with your veterinarians as far as are you getting spending the time with them that you would expect? Are they taking dogs away from you to do simple things like vaccines? And how often, especially if you're going to some of these practices that have multiple veterinarians, are you getting to see the same vet? Or do you get hassled when you say, no, I want to see Dr. Smith? Dr. Smith is only here on Tuesdays and Thursdays. What? But that's what's going on, because these veterinarians, even the good ones, and there are a lot of good ones out there, trust me, but they don't want to work at a place full time. They want to work Monday at this place, Tuesday at that place. Why? Because that's called relief schedule. And believe it or not, from a financial standpoint, and I see where they're coming from, they can make more because there's such a shortage and a need for veterinarians that the practice owners are willing to pay a veterinarian who's a relief vet more than they would pay for a day than their regular vets on staff are getting paid. So the young vets are saying, why? I don't blame them. Why do I want to work there? And as a regular full-time vet, where I can make more by Monday this way, Tuesday, Wednesday this way, Thursday that place, I only can work 4 days a week and make more than they're making 5 or 6 days a week. You know, it's going to change. I really do believe many of us in the industry think it's going to change with these new vet schools popping up. You know, pet insurance is having issues too, by the way. I know we've talked about that before, but I heard that one of the biggies has just doubled their premiums. That's kind of crazy. Anyway, don't go away. We're back after these short messages here on Pet Life Radio. For those of you who are on Instagram, I will stick around, answer your questions, and we'll be back after these short messages from our sponsor. Don't go away.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Second to get that unmute button on my lap. Okay. Hello. Thank you so much. What happened? They took my dog back and told me it was vaccinated. But, there you go. There you go. This Ivy Blue Eye. This is kind of one of the things I'm talking about. It's crazy. They're still doing this. Here's another one. God. West Hollywood Animal Hospital. Listen, only requests for the same. That although they pick up the dog from the parking lot and the owner waits in the car for a phone call discussion. Now, that is not acceptable. I'm sorry. It's not acceptable. You wouldn't do that with your kid if you have kids. And it's unnecessary and unacceptable. That's a cop-out, an absolute cop-out. You have no idea who and what is seeing your dog. You have no idea who's doing any of the testing, who's doing the exam. And I can tell you, if you are a mom and you have kids, you wouldn't tolerate it. Don't tolerate it for your pet. Absolutely not. There's no bonding. You have to have a relationship. My clients get a hold of me. They know exactly who and what I am, and they know that, most importantly, you have no idea how your dog, who should be the ultimate, right? The ultimate judge of a veterinarian, you or your dog. Okay, if you have a dog that hates going in, pulls against it, or they take him from your car, he's tugging against the leash, right? No, that's not right. So 90% of my dogs come charging into the exam, the waiting room, charging. And when they see me or they hear my voice down the hall even, they start pulling, tugging the leash towards me. That's the kind of vet you need to find. Somewhere the dogs, the pets, the cats. How many times I've heard an owner tell me as I'm holding their cat, they in the middle of a 5-7 minute exam, and they're going, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." I go, "What?" She goes, "I've never been able to hold my cat that long." But the job of a good vet is not only to know their stuff; it's to bond with the client and most importantly the patient. And that's what's infuriating me, because it's a lost art, and I hear about it all the time. It's just not happening. And that's why I said when I opened, I'm very worried about what's going to happen with veterinary medicine for all of you, for all you pet parents out there. When the old guys like me are gone, it's crazy. 5-year-old dog to adapt to our puppy, it's been rough. Okay, so one of the things, Doc, how do we get our super beloved 5-year-old dog to adapt? So one of the things you need to do is, and we often make a mistake. Hold on, let me look. What I do it on now. We have 2 million. Hold on, Westminster, Long Beach. I'll see if I know anybody down there, because you could do better than that. All right. I grew up with a vet that owned his own business. He would take us in the back and have us watch surgeries and everything. Now the only thing available to us is a big commercial. Yeah, I know that. Well, where are you? What is it? Tatterweiler. Where, what town? Where are you? Arch and Luke. Yeah. I mean, if you have to drive a little bit, then you can do that. All right. Okay. I'm waving. Okay. Let me record you. getting away with the crap because people exactly, you're right. You're so right, Sharon. They're accepting it. They shouldn't be accepting it. And to think that we have met. Yeah, that's it's it gets me crazy. It gets me crazy. Unacceptable. That's right. Arabic is what it's true. It's true. All right. Okay. There was a question here. Bay Area. Okay. Where are the Bay Area? I know some vets up there. Okay. There was a question I wanted to talk about and I got to go backwards. Okay. How do we get a senior resident dog? Let me move my camera here a little bit. A senior resident dog to adapt to a new puppy. So one of the first things, and it may be a little too late for this, but it's not too late, but too late. The first recommendation, when you know, it's like with kids, when you're going to bring a new baby into the house, you have a resident dog, and what you're trying to do is avoid resentment. And most of the things that we do are basically counterintuitive. And that's why you think you're doing the right thing. So you have the resident dog, okay, and you have the puppy. The first thing you want to do is when most of us would do is when the puppy's in its crate or napping or sleeping, then what do? We pour on the affection to the resident dog. No, it's the opposite. You want to kind of, not meanly, but ignore the resident dog. When does a resident dog get more attention and more treats and more hugs? When the puppy's around. The puppy's not going to remember, okay? But they don't even know what the norm is. They've never been the kingpin, so they don't know how normally they would get affection and treats. So you want to do it when the puppy's around. So now what's the association? Resident dog is thinking, wow, where is that little sucker? I need him here because look what I'm getting every time he's in the room. I'm getting all this affection and love and attention and treats. So that's the way you want to do it. You don't want to, and also don't scold him or her for having a bad reaction. Again, the dog is getting punished for doing what it's natural to do. And then what are they going to do? Resent the puppy even more. But it's that puppy's fault. I'm getting punished because of the puppy. So again, think about what you can do to make life better for the resident dog in the presence of that new puppy. And that's true. So whatever the favorite treat is, save it. And every time the new puppy comes out, Bowser, resident dog, look who's here. Oh my goodness, come here, get your treat. So you want to make it so much fun that's why the resident dog is going to want the puppy around because his or her life is better in that presence of the puppy dog, of the new dog. And also walk them together, feed them together. At first, you don't want competition. So feed them at different parts at the same time, but at different parts of the room, like the kitchen, one end of the kitchen, the other kitchen. Then slowly bring the bowls closer and closer together. My dogs literally eat right on top of each other. My cats the same way. And not only that, my cats they each have their own bowls. So they wait for their bowl to be filled, even though one of the other cats got their bowl filled first. So that's the perfect. And also let them sleep together. As soon as the puppy's house trained, let them sleep together. I mean, like I have all five of our dogs on the bed. I mean, they are sleeping on top of each other and there's very little competition. Sometimes my little Frenchie, who's obnoxious, will get a little pissy when one of the other dogs comes near the bone that he's currently actively chewing. Now, if the bone is sitting there, he doesn't mind. But once he's got it in his mouth, it's like, leave me the heck alone. That's my bone and I'm keeping it. So that's the only time I've heard like a growl, but he's also a Frenchie. So you can't judge Frenchies because they do the weirdest, most quirkiest things. But anyway, all right. Let's see. I want to see anyone I missed. Okay. All right. Instaclo. Okay. Hi, how are you? Brentwood. Well, if you're in Brentwood, then come see me. I'm right on Wilshire and Westwood. That's really close. Hey, Larry. Okay. How's Charlotte doing today? Any better? Might be a little early to tell, but all right. Lucky Ryan joined. Okay. Anyone, if you're in West LA, then who are you seeing in Brentwood? I mean, Brentwood doesn't have a lot. They have, obviously, Brentwood Pet Clinic, which is a VCA. They used to be great, by the way. Again, VCA has a knack of taking a great hospital and ruining it. That's exactly what they do. They just ruin it because it becomes so corporate and there's so much impersonality. And this is the way we do it. There's no ability to have your own style. Oh, Brentwood, Northern California. Okay. Yeah, then we have to, I'll check it out. I'll check it out. Central California. Oh, Central, not LA. Okay. And Lenny Jacobson. Hey, Lenny, how you doing? All right. So, we're all there. Okay, one thing I wanted to talk about real fast. We were talking about vaccines and how disappointed I am and how the trend is changing. Well, one thing that I also want to touch upon is when it comes to cats. I am very, very strongly opinionated when it comes to cats and their vaccines. Why? Because I'm always into core vaccines for dogs, but especially with cats. If there's a disease that they're not going to be subjected to, do not, I repeat, do not vaccinate. Now, in California, it's easy. Why? Because the cats, rabies is not required in cats. It is in many states. And even still, I would fight it. If you have an indoor-only cat, now, indoor-only doesn't mean they don't go outside. Indoor only means they are not going outside alone to potentially mingle with other cats or be subjected to dogs, cars, coyotes, etc. So when you have a cat that you put on a harness and take a walk, that's not considered an outdoor cat. If you have a walled-in balcony or a trellis or something outside where the cats can go out but not be out, then that's still considered an indoor-only cat. For those cats, do not give rabies or leukemia vaccine. The only vaccine that they need as an indoor cat like this is going to be a FVRCP, which is the feline vaccine for rhino, Khaleesi, panleukopenia, pneumonitis, and that is the basic upper respiratory and cat fever vaccine. It's one vaccine, one shot, first one's a year, and then after that, every 3 years. Because there is something called feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. It is a tumor secondary to a vaccine that cats can get. And obviously, it's not a good thing. And if we vaccinate cats on the body where we used to and where we can vaccinate a dog, which is anywhere from the back of the neck to the shoulder area to the flank area to anywhere along the back, then if they get this tumor, it's ultimately going to be their demise. It cannot be surgically removed properly. It's going to always come back because it's growing. As much as it's growing out, it's growing in, goes through the body wall. There's no way to get it out, which is why, if you may have noticed, if your vet is on top of things, they're only vaccinating in a hind thigh. Why? If they should be so misunfortunate to get this vaccine-induced sarcoma, you can't save their lives by, ready for this sad thing, amputating that leg. Now, tripod cats do fine, but why subject an indoor-only cat or a cat that's always under your careful, watchful eye, give them a vaccine that could cause this tumor, that could cause them to lose a limb? That doesn't make sense. So don't let your vet, well, first of all, if you ever see your vet in your room and they're giving a vaccine anywhere but a thigh, stop them right there. I've seen cases over the years that we ultimately had to put the cat to sleep. It's not a pretty thing. So when it comes to that, less is more. You only give vaccines that are absolutely necessary, that from disease, against diseases that they reasonably can catch. But indoor-only cats are cats that are always under your care, even if they go out, like whether in the carrier, they're on a harness, on the walk, and on the patio, closed patio. That doesn't count. That's considered indoor only. Do not give those vaccines. Now, let me see. There's a spot of blood early this morning on the floor. Since my dog is spayed, I thought it might be a cut, but I didn't see any of it. There's such much more blood at the spot. I saw much more blood at the spot my dog peed on. That sounds weird. Can you take a picture? How long ago was she spayed? And because it's possible that if a dog is spayed before, soon before, within a week or two before their upcoming heat, estrus, they are still going to have that estrus. They're still going to bleed. Now, the whole uterus is not good, but the body of the uterus is going to still be there. So, so you're going to have a stump pyometra is when the stump that's left gets infected. If the upcoming heat was going to happen hormonally, there still may be that swelling of the vulva. And if there's a very short part of that body of the uterus is still there, they might have a little bit of blood. So that is, that's possible. Do you do hormone replacement for a male dog that has been neutered, but now has fears and aggression they never had before? I would talk to a behaviorist on that one. I've not read that it's because of lack of male hormones. If anything, it's the opposite. And if it's been a while, then it's unlikely. So something else behaviorally happened, and I would treat, well, first of all, there are ways you can make appointments with, and you can contact me off air. I can give you some behaviorists that now can do these behavioral consults virtually and see the animal virtually, ask the right questions, get the answers, and then prescribe or recommend something from your vet how to treat it. But I would think I would do more an anxiety medication, whether it's Prozac, look for the triggers. When is a dog showing signs of fear or aggression? With whom? Is it now across the board generally? If it's an older dog, there's something could be happening in the brain. I don't necessarily think it's hormonal. But again, I can give you some names of some good behaviorists that do, a lot of the behaviorists can do now virtual exams. All right, Michelle, hello. Wow, $2 picture on GPs again. Yeah, send it to me for sure. Martineau, hello. Waving. It's a 3-year-old dog. Yeah, and what was it? What's the breed? Let me know the breed. Okay. So, yeah, but yeah, I'm not convinced. All right. So we have gone through. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me. If I didn't get to your questions, I think I did. She is now 4, was spayed at 8 months. No, it's not that. It's not that. So, yeah, we got to look around the body, look for the feet, toenails, see where else, you know, can you just get a drop of blood. I would check very carefully. All right. I think we are good. Okay, I think I got to have, oh, one last thing. We're going to talk about it in depth next week, pre-Halloween. Halloween, be really, really, really careful. You're going to need a bunch of suggestions. That's going to be my subject for next week, or at least for part of the show. In the meantime, when you're buying the candy, you're probably trying to get it now because it's cheaper. And you can get it in bulk and go to Costco and get the huge bag that you're never going to finish. And well, you're going to finish. You're going to afraid to get on the scale afterwards. But anyway, no xylitol. Be careful of the chocolate. Too much chocolate is no good. Milk chocolate is not as strong, but it's still, be really, really careful. Too many nuts, macadamia nuts, raisins, grapes, anything, trail mixes. You got to be really, really careful. So be careful what you buy. And when you buy it, be really careful how accessible it is to your dog. Because I can guarantee one thing, if they can possibly even remotely get to it, they will. With that thought, we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and my Instagram Live. Thanks for joining me. Any questions during the week, you know how to get a hold of me. And we'll see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.